everyone. This is Dave Chen from DaveChen.net and /film.com. And right now, I'm speaking with Natasha Vargas Cooper. Natasha Vargas, well, I was going to say, excuse me, Natasha, I'm trying to give you an intro here. Natasha Vargas Cooper's, I'm sorry, I messed it up now. Natasha Vargas Cooper's work has appeared in publications as diverse as The Atlantic Monthly, The All, The Daily Beast, Salon.com, New York Magazine, and The Wall Street Journal. Natasha, thanks for speaking with me today.
Am I allowed to speak now?
Yes, you are.
I'm really glad to be here.
You sound really glad to be here. Now, Natasha, So this is kind of a podcasting experiment of sorts, but what I thought might be good to talk about is you recently had a piece published, a cover story, I believe is a technical term for it, not mm-hmm. the cover story, but it was on the cover,
yes.
about pornography. And the piece is called Hardcore, The New World of Porn is Revealing Eternal Truths About Men and Women. This is in a January/February 2011 edition of The Atlantic Monthly. Now, many of the people listening to this may not have read the piece, so why don't you tell people what your thesis is?
Oh, man. All right. Let's do this. The thesis of the piece is twofold. One, that... one of the big concerns about porn, as it has always been, but now especially because it's so huge and that it's so easily accessible and that anybody can basically access it at any moment from their iPhone and see, I'm sorry, we're going to get blue, like all sorts of things being put in ladies' butts and mouths simultaneously, that that porn is going to have some kind of deleterious effect on young men, that it's going to influence men in their relationships, that they're going to expect women to do these things and to conform to these sexual extremes, which they believe are norms. And there's been like a whole rash of feminist literature and media literature about this, right? That this is like now the new kind of sexual agenda being set by the porn industry. So I say that that's wrong because I don't buy it. And mostly because I have slept with enough men, I believe, in my time to know that dudes will want to do dirty things and be aggressive and dominant in bed before there was porn and after there was porn. And that porn, more than anything, just kind of reflects some of the themes that have always existed in Western sexuality.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah. No, please continue. That was your very interesting. Continue.
So, and the other thing is that I think one of the big parts of one of the reasons why feminists love to talk about porn, and especially now, is because it's never been resolved in the kind of feminist community, right? It was either a tool of oppression, or you know, you were sex positive. But now when it's like you can watch Chechen teens getting fisted, right, like pretty quickly.
I'm watching that right now, actually.
Who isn't? I mean, TiVo'd. So, you know, when that happens, like it fucks up the paradigm for everybody. But one of the things that has come out of the sexual revolution is that feminists are like, sex can be freeing, that sex is egalitarian, that as long as you communicate with your partner, that sex will generally be this really pleasurable and enjoyable experience. And I don't think that's actually the case. I think sex more often is about power and subjugation and humiliation. I think that's part of what makes sex fun. That's part of the thrill of it. That's part of the taboo of it. But that sex by its very nature is extreme. And that the consequences for women are far greater than they are for men. And that one of the swindles that's happened about porn and that has happened with the way that feminists talk about porn is not that they also say that it's really bad, but also that they say that sex is not that big of a deal. And I think sex is. And I think sex is scary. And I think young girls should be scared of it. And I think a good way for them to get kind of a sense of what the sexual landscape is to just spend 15 minutes surfing for porn on the internet. And you will see the kind of extent of male desire, the extent of what and how quickly porn actually mimics what sex feels like, which is that all of a sudden one minute you're watching a straight couple do it missionary, and then all of a sudden you've been led to, you know, two women on the end of a of a dong ass to ass in Aronofsky style, and you're aroused by it. And that's the thing about sex, is that it moves real quick. You do things you wouldn't think you would do. And so, yeah, so that is my thesis. Boom, spark notes.
Okay, let me sort of probe a little more deeply, if I may use
Please
that
probe.
Term.
Yes.
So is your contention, if I'm trying to like boil this down, that that sex, or I should say pornography, has not accelerated mankind, like male gender's descent into depravity? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, of course not. No, I don't buy that at all.
Okay.
I think men have been depraved before, long before. All you need to think of is a Roman orgy, and will be depraved long after. And that is just something that women have to contend with, you know? Male sexuality is a combustible aspect of sex, and you should just kind of know that going in. And I think if you know that going in, then you'll have an okay time. You'll know where to draw your boundaries, and you'll know what you're doing. But I don't think porn does that. I think all porn does is that it will make, because of its mass consumption, it will make certain things easier to broach for men, like anal sex, like waxing, like, you know, I think dudes have a kind of natural desire to come on a girl's face. I don't think that was invented. I don't think the money shot was invented by Vivid Video, you know? And if they did, they should have patented it. But, but I think that's just a constant strain in male sexuality and with between men and women. And you know what, David Chen? Let me throw this little piece down for you.
Throw a piece down for me.
Here's something that I didn't put in the piece because I didn't want to take the focus off the issue of male sexuality, but that I don't think a lot of women have a problem with that. I think some feminists have a problem with it, and I think women who...
Wait. Don't have a problem with what exactly?
Oh, having men have the desire to degrade them sexually.
Right.
I haven't heard a lot of girls complain about, you know, having hot sex where their hair is pulled and they're spanked, you know? And I don't hear a lot of girls coming back from sexual experience who are like, I really want to fist my boyfriend's asshole, and I really want to dominate the shit out of him. Like, I can't wait till we get to the point in the sexual relationship where I can just, you know, tell him that he's a filthy slut. That doesn't seem to be part of the deal. Like, the more kind of intimate and exciting the sex is, generally the more the girls want and enjoy being dominated. I don't know why.
Well, I think one thing we've learned tonight, Natasha, is clearly we hang around different crowds of people. No, I'm just joking.
Here's a guess. I would say that you. I don't think. I think I have an insight because I'm a woman who talks to women. I don't think this is something.
No, I was just being facetious because you were talking about.
Oh.
Yeah, you were saying I don't. None of the women I know.
Fisted.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly.
Of course.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Natasha, I could listen to you talk all day, but let's. I have a couple of, I guess, articles or things I've read that I think it might be worth bringing to your attention and maybe hearing what your response to them might be.
Please.
A couple years ago. Well, let's see when this date is. It doesn't say when it was, but Naomi Wolf wrote an article for New York Magazine called "The Porn Myth." Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, I read it a little while ago.
Yeah, it was.
I have a little chihuahua who will bark in the background from time to time.
No worries.
Go ahead.
It was a pretty good article, and it made some kind of some good points about the sanctity of sex in some ways. Let me read to you from the end of this.
Please.
If I may. I will never forget a visit I made to Alana, an old friend who had become an Orthodox Jew in Jerusalem. When I saw her again, she had abandoned her jeans and t-shirts for long skirts and a headscarf. I could not get over it. Alana has waist-length, wild and curly, golden blonde hair. "Can't I even see your hair?" I asked, trying to find my old friend in there. "No," she demurred quietly. "Only my husband," she said, with a calm sexual confidence, "ever gets to see my hair." When she showed me her little house in a settlement on a hill, and I saw the bedroom draped in Middle Eastern embroideries that she shares only with her husband, the kids are not allowed, the sexual intensity in the air was archaic and overwhelming. It was private. It was a feeling of erotic intensity deeper than any I have ever picked up between secular couples in the liberated West. And I thought, our husbands see naked women all day, in Times Square, if not on the internet. Her husband never even sees another woman's hair. She must feel, I thought, so hot. Compare that steaminess with a conversation I had at Northwestern after I talked about the effect of porn on relationships. Why have sex right away? A boy with tousled hair and Bambi eyes is explaining. Things are always a little tense and uncomfortable when you just start seeing someone, he said. I prefer to have sex right away just to get it over with. You know it's going to happen anyway, and it gets rid of the tension. Isn't the tension kind of fun, I asked? Doesn't that also get rid of the mystery? Mystery, he looked at me blankly, and then without hesitating, he replied, I don't know what you're talking about. Sex has no mystery.
Yes.
Chilling words, Natasha.
Chilling words. I mean, anything that takes place with, like, the kind of romanticism and eroticism of an Orthodox Jew couple, I know that we're on some groundbreaking territory. So look, I have two reactions to that. I get it, and I think that there is something to be said for mystery and allure. But here's my two problems with this. And here's actually, I have a mad beef with all of these women writers who came before me. And it's not their fault, but they didn't grow up with one-click access to gangbang porn, right? It just, that's how, I mean, I think you and I are of the same age.
You have it programmed on your bookmarks, right?
Yes. I mean, look, I was, 16 when broadband hit? I was 12 when, everybody I knew had AOL and you would spend, 7 minutes downloading a thumbnail, right? And, that was just, I mean, and whatever, there's been a huge shift. There's been a massive shift exacerbated by the technological revolution, and the dust has still to settle on it. And so what kind of came before is interesting, but it's a different world. It's the fucking dark ages as far as I'm concerned. So but Naomi Wolf's point, so I get it, but here's the problem. And here's the problem that that modern feminism and the sexual revolution has done, which is that you are either a hyper-liberated, enlightened, sex-positive college student or a college-educated student, or you're in a corset or a head wrap, and you're kind of a nouveau Victorian. So neither one of, and that's the kind of, those are the, that's the binary, essentially. There's no real constituency for girls and for women who enjoy sex, but also maybe particularly like it rough, but also think that they should be taken out on 5 dates before they do that, who think that abortion, because one of the things I say in my piece is that, look, there is an imbalance, and from the beginning and to the end of time, there will be an imbalance between men and women and sex beyond just how you feel after you fuck a dude. Because look, here's the other thing. I was raised I come from, a liberal background. I was raised with the notion that I could inhabit the sexual sphere like a man could, which also meant that I could fuck without feeling something. And when I would feel things, like when I would sleep with dudes, and I would, wouldn't necessarily want a relationship, but it would definitely want a phone call and would definitely want, some spooning, definitely want a show of affection. And not that I was ever treated particularly cruelly, but when I got the kind of blow off, I was devastated. And that made me feel like a bad feminist. And that also made me feel out of place, because I also am not a prude, right? Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I don't know if you got that, but another thing is I also consume porn. I also enjoy a nice bit of sexual roughhousing, and I don't think I'm that far out of the mainstream. So that's one of the problems, is that this whole thing has been kind of hijacked, and it's not Naomi Wolf's fault, but, she's just from a different time. And so I just, she doesn't speak to my experience, doesn't speak to my generation, and I feel like there's just that constituency doesn't exist between the liberated people, the super hyper enlightened people where sex is no mystery and they can see 500 puckering assholes a day on the internet, and then the Orthodox peasant couple in the hills of Israel. There has to be an in between.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think those are the only two possible paradigms.
Look, David Chen, I know the campaign that you're mounting. I've seen your Facebook statuses.
What? Wait, what? I was just joking, but now you're taking.
I'm joking. And by the way, I'm also not calling. Can I say one other thing?
No.
Can I get?
No, you can't.
Can I get crazy here?
Go ahead.
So look, I say this from a position of love. I dig dudes. I dig dudes so hard. Okay, but I like dudes. Like, I want young Brandos in my life all the time. I don't like Ryan Gosling. I think Michael Cera is an abomination. I don't see why people are sexually attracted to him. But one of the things, though, is that women, I believe, are different and have opposing agendas and have a different way of experiencing the world than men. And I don't think that we need to reconcile that. And I think that sex is something that will never be equal and it will never be fair as long as we can get pregnant, have miscarriages and abortions, and as long as we have feelings after we fuck. And I don't care if men are capable or incapable, brother, right now, generally, they just don't wanna. And I do not wanna spend my time trying to bridge that gap. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not into like educating men about like the nice and proper things to do during sex. And I don't think that porn has more sway over them than I do. I'm just, you know, like, just fuck the right dudes and be in love with the right dudes, I guess. I didn't want to get preachy, but girls, just be nice to your vaginas and your hearts.
All right. Well, last point, yeah. I guess. I mean, we're rapidly running out of time here, but Tracy Clark Flory over at salon.com wrote, I thought, what was a very thoughtful response to your piece. And she writes here, let's see. She writes this anecdote about how someone made a joke about DP, if you know what DP is, and the guy knew what DP was, but the girl didn't know what DP was. And she writes, this is a common sexual divide in heterosexual relationships. And it's one I was recently reminded of after reading Natasha Vargas Cooper's piece in The Atlantic this month about how the new world of porn is revealing eternal truths about men and women. This is in contradiction to the media narrative about the pornified women of my generation. And essentially what I think the piece argues, and I'm not 100% sure because I didn't have sufficient time to prep for this podcast that we're doing right now.
I move fast, David Chen.
Porn may be more present and popular than ever, but clearly, sexual relationships are still filled with shyness, fear, and vulnerability, which is to say that fundamentally, sex really doesn't change all that much. And I think that actually in some ways agrees with part of your piece, but I think what she was trying to say that, you know, this is not... You're portraying the world in your piece as, you know, much more sexually open, where, you know, the gangbang and the fisting is a one-click access away and all these things, but that in reality, all of this sort of, shall we say, unconventional sex, all of the pornography and stuff, very much still hidden in relationships between men and women.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because I grew up in Los Angeles, but like, David Chen, like, look, I fuck dudes from Wisconsin. Like, it's all the same shit. Like, and I don't think dudes are asking the gangbang chicks. And I don't think dudes are asking, like, I don't think fisting has become part of the sexual repertoire. But 30 years ago, if you were to put a girl on her knees on the first night, that is taboo. Outside of sex communes and bohemians, that was just not part of the sexual norm, okay? That's not the case now. If a dude on the first night was like, let's do doggy style, I have now my own kind of trip on it, but...
but like, you're saying one would probably be okay.
One would. The collective she.
the royal she.
I don't think it would be like, whoa, hey, like, that's out of line. Whereas, like, if a dude were to propose anal sex on the first night, I think that would be. Now, the point is that I don't think the playing field has changed, but the goalpost has definitely moved in a way. But I don't think that's just due to porn, right? That's due to industrialization, to the pill, to just the way that men and women sexually relate to one another.
I think industrialization is the biggest factor. No, I'm just joking.
I mean, look, I don't know about you, but like after I read Das Kapital, all I wanted to do was get into a gangbang. So I think
that makes us soulmates, Natasha.
It's true. I don't think that dudes are particularly necessarily asking for gangbangs and fisting or whatever. But I think that the theme that exists in most sexual relationships is one of domination and submission. I don't see how that, like, that also in itself is not a radical notion. That was generally what was agreed upon for the past 2,000 years. This is why dads told their girls not to get in cars with boys, because boys will take every inch that you'll give them. That was just common sense. And then with the sexual revolution and with the rise of PC culture to a degree, it was like, no, we can like train ourselves to act responsibly, to act rationally in sex, which like, I'm sorry, like sex is like an irrational thing that undermines reason, that undermines boundaries. And porn is just a reflection of that. And can I just make one other point?
Nope.
So I just typed in my favorite web portal page called tiava.com, T-I-A-V-A, right? And because I've gotten a little flack like from the ladies at Double X who just did an insipid podcast about this piece and were like really dismissive and like, I don't think dudes are like that, even though like none of those women have had sex with a college guy in like a decade. So they were like, oh, we don't think that a lot of women, like that a lot of men actually want to like look at hardcore porn in this way, that they probably just want Jenna Jameson stuff. Which like, whether they want that or not, that this stuff isn't hard to come by, that it doesn't take me 2 seconds to find a picture or a video of a chick taking on 3 black dudes, 2 in her ass, 1 in her mouth. Like, I'm looking at it right as we speak. It took me typing in one thing, right? Like, this stuff is everywhere. Like, it's like the fact that not suitable for work is an abbreviation that everybody kind of knows now. Like, it just, to kind of deny its existence and to think that, like, this hasn't completely seeped in and can't easily seep in is just, that's a joke. You know, that's just dismissing a kind of cultural force. So if it's seeping into sexual relationships, I think it was already there. Is the point. Did that answer your question?
Well, I think what Tracy Clark Flory was trying to say is that there's still a lot of there's a lot more repression going on than your piece lets on, I think is what.
I don't know. I mean,
But ultimately, Natasha, listening to you, you know, it strikes me that a lot of this is probably anecdotal, to be honest with you, or very much a product of the environment that you spend the most time in, you know.
I think I spent. I would throw it back the other way, which is I think the reaction is up to the piece is more anecdotal to the circles that women journalists run in.
Okay,
which are small and elite and white and polished and repressed. I'm not sure how poor people fuck, because I haven't fucked that many poor people and. That's not my circle, but I grew up middle class. I don't have a particularly outrageous sexual background in any way. I think I have a pretty typical experience. So I refute your point. And I think actually the more kind of boutique and anecdotally driven evidence comes from a professional class of writers. You know? And while I've made a profession out of being a writer recently, I haven't quite lived in Ivy League circles or in or in the academy, right? And I'm not saying that like these people are elitist, but I think that my like the kind of worlds that I inhabit, I think are probably pretty typical. I'm just a normal gal with a broadband connection.
Right. Understood.
and I know how to type in red too.
You're just a regular girl looking for her own effed up piece of mind.
I'm just looking for my own webcam eroticism.
I was trying to quote Eternal Sunshine there, but it didn't really.
Do not quote Eternal Sunshine to me, David Chen. We are not going to get into the Gondry canon.
Didn't really work out that well. Anyway, Well, Natasha Vargas Cooper, why don't you tell people how they can find this piece you wrote? What is it called? Hardcore, is it?
It's called Hardcore. It is on the Atlantic. You just type in Hardcore into the search engine, or you type in my name, Natasha Vargas hyphen Cooper, and it should pop up. And they can read it. And it's a 5,000-word piece. It took about a year to write. It started actually initially with like me collecting like sexual anecdotes from my friends and from people under the age of 30. And also when I asked people about their sex lives, it was specifically, I talked to a lot of people in relationships, but I don't know about you, David Chen, but I would say that another thing to keep in mind in this whole discussion when we talk about sex, we need to talk about submission and domination is, and porn, is that I think what kind of ignites the sexual imagination and eroticism in people isn't particularly the sex that you have with somebody that you've been intimate with for 3 years, right? Because a lot of it, like, and what happens in marriages, right? Or what happens after you've lived with somebody for a long time. Like, I think that sex, like, those people are definitely having sex. But I think when you really think about it and what excites you and what kind of defines your sexual persona is a lot of the sex that you have in between relationships that overlap with relationships that are affairs, that are torrid, that are impulsive, that don't have the buffers of intimacy and just have, for lack of a better term, the rawness that comes with sexuality. Because you can definitely push boundaries with somebody that who you know and you share a bathroom with. But it's a very different experience to push boundaries to somebody that you don't have that kind of intimacy with. And so I would, and that's the kind of sex that I'm really talking about. And I think that's the kind of, you know, because like what partners respectfully do to each other, that's like unknowable, you know? And I don't find that to be as definitive. Right. I feel like I made a lot of really outrageous statements tonight, but I stand by them, David Chen.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what happens when I publish this, which will be in the next probably 10 minutes. So.
Oh, I'm thrilled.
Well, Natasha Vargas Cooper, thank you so much for joining me today. And hopefully this will be the first of many such conversations.
Yes, absolutely. I can't wait to talk about the Oscars and how the fighter should win.
All right. And people can find Natasha in the meantime at natashavc.com or at twitter.com/natashavc. You can, of course, always find me at davechen.net or twitter.com/davechensky. Thank you for listening.